It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price. The next phase in the impeachment of a president.
They have the evidence they're going to have. There's not going to be any more evidence likely. They're going to go with this.
That is our top story this Friday. The public hearings now done. Now Democrats expected to start drafting articles of impeachment against President Trump.
They're fully intent on proceeding with this wherever it leads and beginning when they return from their Thanksgiving recess.
Former federal prosecutor Robert Ray says four articles of impeachment could be drawn up against the president. Louisiana Republican John Kennedy says the Senate is ready for whatever comes out of the House.
When it gets to the Senate, we're going to do it right. Now, everybody's going to have their day in court.
Kennedy says Democrats in the House have not given Republicans there a fair shake in the impeachment inquiry. A trial in the U.S. Senate could take up to 2 months or be over quickly.
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has vowed to go through with a trial, but he suggested it might not last very long, noting arguments, testimony, and deliberation would force all other Senate business to the side.
That's Stephen Portnoy in Washington this afternoon. Impeachment talks expected to ramp up again next month. President Trump calls it the biggest political scandal in the history of the United States.
What you're going to see, I predict, will be perhaps the biggest scandal in the history of our country, political scandal.
That was Mr. Trump earlier today on Fox News after reports that someone inside the FBI changed records related to the surveillance of the Trump campaign ahead of the 2016 election.
They were spying on my campaign, and it went right up to the top, and everybody knows it, and now we're going to find out. I'm not surprised to see it. It's just starting to come up. I think this is nothing compared to what you'll see over the next couple of weeks.
President Trump says the highly anticipated Justice Department report into the origins of the Russia investigation will be released early next month. Protesters have gathered outside of the home of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Here because today the Prime Minister of Israel has been indicted for bribery and breach of trust, and he must resign his office today.
Netanyahu accused of doling out political favors in exchange for positive news coverage. Reporter Roxanne Saberi has more.
Netanyahu is vowing to keep leading the country, and under Israeli law, he can stay in office until a final verdict. Even if he's eventually convicted, the appeals process could take years.
That's Roxanne Saberi reporting from Israel today. In western Colorado, more than 20,000 students have an extended Thanksgiving break because of a norovirus outbreak.
I have three kids, and they like to share germs.
Joy Zeller says the district-wide school shutdown is inconvenient, but is necessary.
We definitely don't want to be sick for Thanksgiving.
46 schools in Grand Junction, Colorado, closed until after the Thanksgiving break.
Particles get in the air, and then if you're near there, you breathe the air, and you've been exposed.
Sanitation crews now cleaning the surface areas of every single school in Grand Junction, Colorado. An appeals hearing has upheld the indefinite suspension for Cleveland Browns defensive lineman Miles Garrett for hitting another player in the head with the helmet he'd torn off in a game last week. It means he'll miss the rest of this season and perhaps more. The league says it found no evidence to support Garrett's claim that Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph used a racial slur during that fight. For the first time in his presidency, Donald Trump has awarded the National Medal of Arts and Humanities. Here's correspondent Gary Nunn.
President honored eight people.
Each of today's recipients has made outstanding contributions to American society, culture, and life.
He began by honoring actor John Voight, whom he called a great friend.
He has captivated audiences for more than half a century.
And he called The Champ the greatest boxing movie of all time. Musician Alison Krauss.
There's a truth in your eyes.
She
She has received more than 25 top awards,
earning more Grammys than any other woman.
Author James Patterson is one of the most prolific and talented fiction writers of all time.
277 books, including
Alex Cross.
Got ourselves a Four Roses.
He also honored Chef Patrick O'Connell, Sharon Rockefeller, Teresa Lozano Long, and the Claremont Institute. And the president recognized the musicians of the U.S. military.
That is Gary Nunn reporting from Washington, from music to the movies at the box office this weekend.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
The highly anticipated film, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, starring Tom Hanks as the beloved children's television host Fred Rogers, hits theaters nationwide. Film critic Justin Chang says, this isn't a movie for kids, though.
The movie almost plays like a very special episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood at feature length and for grown-ups.
Instead of helping children in this film, Mr. Rogers helps a grown-up.
Everyone, this is Lloyd Vogel. He is a wonderful writer.
The movie based on a true story, but Tom Hanks says it will not answer every question about Mr. Rogers.
There is this mystery of why, what's his motivation here?
This woman who watched the film gave it two big thumbs up.
This great movie on forgiveness. Teach us we have to forgive.
Please won't you be my neighbor.
Definitely going to be checking that one out. Still to come this Friday, check this out. Murder charges in Allegheny County, New York. Jerry Sandusky being resentenced right now. And why we celebrate Thanksgiving on a Thursday.
Well, a very good afternoon to all. The weekend is here. Looks like a chilly one. One that features sun to start, clouds to finish, and a little mixed precip for a few in between. I'll have forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Already, Kevin Williams checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania Friday, November 22nd. Murder and manslaughter in rural Allegheny County, New York. 17-year-old William Larson Jr. of Clarksville facing two counts of second-degree murder and two counts of first-degree manslaughter after two bodies were found in a Thursday morning house fire. The teenager arrested last night following a day-long search.
We're glad that it's resolved peacefully.
Major Edward Kennedy with the New York State Police says he's not commenting on the identities of the victims or how they were killed. The house that was burned belonged to William Larson, and his parents still haven't been located. Neighbor Jim Dearmitt says a friend of his ran into the accused while police were looking for him yesterday.
Trying to catch little Billy Larson for apparently what he had done. He tried to stop him, and he said, I know what you did. You know, they're looking for you. And the kid said, no, they're not looking for me. And he goes, yeah, I know what you did. You started the house on fire. And he turned to him and said, no, the house is still standing. And he goes, what are you going to do, shoot me?
Several area schools were shut down Thursday as a result of the investigation. Major Kennedy says this incident has shaken rural Allegheny County, New York, to its core.
I want to thank the community and the school communities for their cooperation and their understanding. It's stressful for anyone in this area that lives here, for the residents of that road, for this town.
William Larson Jr. arraigned last night and is currently being held in the Erie County Youth Services Center on $50,000 bail. Former Penn State assistant football coach Jerry Sandusky in a Pennsylvania courtroom right now, where he's being resentenced after an appeals court said mandatory minimum sentences against him had been improperly applied. The 75-year-old is being resentenced at the county courthouse in Bellefonte. Sandusky was convicted of 45 counts of child sex abuse back in 2012 and was sentenced to 30 to 60 years behind bars. Controversy on two college campuses will start at Syracuse University, where an emotional press conference from the school's chancellor this week did little to silence the chorus of calls for him to step down. This as the university deals with a rash of racist incidents the past few weeks.
This is our safety. Like, I don't feel safe. A lot of people here don't feel safe.
Top officials at Syracuse now weighing Chancellor Kent Siverud's future at that university. Meantime, at Messiah College in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, a student there defending his controversial tweets that mocked gay and lesbians and hinted at assaulting women.
I'm showing people how devaluing human life in any sense is wicked and wrong. Obviously, rape is wicked and evil, but why is that evil in your worldview when you hold that babies should be murdered in the womb? You're holding to one's being morally okay and one's being morally wrong, and you can't justify to me why that's the case.
Zach McDonough says his controversial tweets were driving home points he was trying to make about abortion and rape, but female students at Messiah called the tweets hate speech. They don't feel safe. Your senior, Haley Farragelli.
As a woman on this campus, I have felt unsafe for a very long time just because we don't know what these men are capable of.
Messiah College says it's taking the tweets very seriously and are deciding on a course of action. A pro-life proposal that would have prevented Down syndrome abortions in Pennsylvania has been vetoed by the governor. Family Life's Terry Diener.
Governor Tom Wolf made good on a promise and rejected the legislation. Wolf's veto message called it a restriction on women and medical professionals that interferes with women's health care and decisions made by patients and their physicians. He argued it was unneeded legislation. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. The measure passed the General Assembly in Harrisburg, and Republican State Representative Kate Klunk says Governor Tom Wolf out of touch with most Americans when it comes to this issue.
We have a responsibility to stand up and say that a baby that has been diagnosed with Down syndrome has a right to life and should not be discriminated against in the womb.
Another pro-life bill in the Keystone State that would require hospitals to provide the burial of fetal remains after a miscarriage now headed to the state Senate. Governor Tom Wolf has promised to veto that bill as well. A majority of New Yorkers do not approve of the job Governor Andrew Cuomo is doing. That, according to the latest Siena College poll, 49% say the Democrat doing a poor job at running the state, 44% in love with the gov. Pollster Steve Greenberg.
He's now been governor for 9 years. How voters feel about him is pretty locked in. So it's really going to take something dramatic to move his numbers in a big way.
The poll comes as Cuomo gets set to release his State of the State agenda for the upcoming new year. We'll ever wonder why we celebrate Thanksgiving on a Thursday? Wonder no more. Family Life's Bob Price takes a closer look at the history of the holiday.
Yeah, historians don't exactly know which day of the week the legendary first Thanksgiving happened on, but they do know it happened in October, not November. How's that for some history? According to the Farmer's Almanac, Thursdays were special in Puritan times. That's when ministers would often give public religious lectures. Thanksgiving has been held on the last Thursday in November since the founding of the country. Abraham Lincoln proclaimed the first official Thanksgiving holiday in 1863. Bob Price, Family Life News.
Thank you for the history lesson there, Bob. Big league win for the Texans last night. Sunny time. Here's your two-minute drill.
Yeah, Thursday night football in AFC South affair. And the Texans now alone in first place. Deshaun Watson threw a pair of touchdowns to DeAndre Hopkins. Texans hold off the Colts 20-17. Houston 7-4. Indy slips to 6-5. The NFL is upholding the indefinite suspension of Browns defensive end Miles Garrett, but have reduced the Steelers center Marquise Pouncey suspension from 3 games to 2. To the ice, Islanders remain hot. Brock Nelson scored twice, including
Nelson left side, stepping, dragging to the backhand, score!
In overtime, Islanders beat the Penguins 4-3. That just happened to be Brock Nelson's 500th game.
You'll remember milestones, first game, first goal, and then now 500, kind of way it played out. It'll be something you'll remember for a while, so right now it's a big win for us, kind of keeping it alive.
The Owls set a team record with a point in 16 consecutive games. The Pens have lost 4 of 5, including back-to-back overtime defeats to the Islanders, but Mike Sullivan said,
every point's a good point. You know, they're a good team. You know, I liked a lot of our game, and we've just got to take the point, and we've got to move on.
In Boston, Bruins slip by the Sabres 3-2. Ouch, says Brandon Montour.
We played a little bit better, but in the end, you know, it's another loss. So, we got to start getting on the win column pretty soon here and take, I guess, the positives out of that one and move on. But, you know, we got to start winning some on.
In Raleigh, Claude Giroux scored twice, including the go-ahead goal in the third. The Flyers beat the Hurricanes 5-3.
We did do a lot of good things offensively, but defensively we did a few mistakes, and it cost us a
a few goals. And but you know what? I think it's important that we build on this as a line and as a team.
And Sheldon Keefe wins his debut as head coach of the Maple Leafs over the Coyotes 3-1. Duquesne remains undefeated, knocking off Indiana State 74-71. Robert Morris falls to UIC 72-62. SUNY Cortland crushed by Colgate 89-50. Pitt big over Arkansas Pine Bluff. Buffalo falls to UConn. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphier.
Getting it done. Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Family Life Noon Report, the boys are back. Capital Connection queued up, ready to go, plus Oxford Dictionary's Word of the Year.
America now has a timetable for walking on another planet. While scientists sort out the how, Christians can offer a uniquely compelling why. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine has renewed his vow to put astronauts on Mars by as early as 2035. The head of America's space program says we'll start by going back to the moon, where we can test the technology necessary to make a much longer voyage to the red planet. But the whole project to put boots on another planet, something incredibly expensive, dangerous, and time-consuming, raises a very interesting question. Why should we do this? Back in the 60s, the obvious answer for why to go to the moon was to beat the Soviets. The space race, like the nuclear arms race, carried enormous military implications. And then there was a symbolic victory, which was won when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin planted the Stars and Stripes on the lunar surface. But there was a third reason for space exploration back then, which, unlike the other two reasons, still applies now. In last year's movie First Man, Neil Armstrong, played by Ryan Gosling, finds himself forced to justify the space program to the public and to public officials, not to mention his own family, as accidents accumulated and the cost of lives mounted. Pointing beyond practical things like military supremacy, Armstrong in the film argued that the ultimate reason for going to space is that it was a worthy undertaking, something human beings were made to do. It allows us to see things, he said, that maybe we should have seen a long time ago but haven't been able to until now. Well, looking back on pictures from that first moon landing, especially the one of the Earth rising over the moon's surface, it's kind of hard to disagree with that. His answer reminds me of a scene in The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, the fifth Chronicle of Narnia, in which the Dawn Treader's crew must choose whether to sail on toward an island cloaked in forbidding darkness or to turn back to safety. When one of them asked, well, what manner of use would it be plowing through that blackness? Reepicheep, the bravest crew member, despite being the smallest, rebukes them for their faint-heartedness. Use, the mouse replies, if by use you mean filling our bellies or our purses, I confess it will be no use at all. So far as I know, we did not set sail to look for things useful, but to seek honor and adventures. And here is as great an adventure as ever I heard of. And so they sailed on. If NASA's plans to land on Mars are realized, so will we. With sincere apologies to Reepicheep the mouse, I think the renewed push to put astronauts on Mars is a sign of something uniquely human. The urge to venture beyond our horizon, even in the face of seemingly impossible obstacles, is a dead giveaway that we're not like all the other creatures. We're made in the image of God. His original mandate to take dominion over all of creation still rings in our hearts and in our ears. For most of human history, gravity prevented us from taking dominion over anything beyond this planet, but the rest of creation still awaits us. This urge points to something true about even those who don't acknowledge or believe in the one whose image they bear. Every scientist who peers through a microscope, every mathematician who solves a seemingly impossible problem, and every astronaut who has slipped the surly bonds of Earth knows how asking what use these things are simply misses the point. Of course, many human adventures turn out to be useful. But the real question to be asked is not what purpose our discoveries serve, but what purpose we serve. According to Scripture, God placed us here to rule over creation, to steward it, to bring it to flourishing, and in the process of witnessing all that He's made, to echo His glory back to Him. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Coming up on 20 minutes past the hour this Friday afternoon, the weekend is here. So too, meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Behind the cold front that brought some showers and winds earlier today, a chilly night is coming up and a chilly weekend will follow. High pressure will deliver sunshine tomorrow for most of us, but low pressure will threaten cloud cover and a little mixed precipitation for some. Saturday night into Sunday morning, particularly northeastern Pennsylvania. Here's our forecast for this afternoon. Still some gusty breezes out there with clouds, intervals of sunshine, and a few spots of brief shower or flurry. Temperatures have long since peaked for the day. They'll hold steady or drop from where they are now. Then tonight, mainly clear, less wind and chilly, down in the 20s. For tomorrow, sunshine most of the day. Clouds increase late, the high in the 40s. Rather cloudy on Sunday. Chance for a little morning mix across parts of eastern Pennsylvania, the eastern southern tier of New York. High temperatures Sunday in the lower 40s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. You're plugged into the Noon Report, a Friday edition on Family Life.
And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Gear at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Big win on the Sanctity of Human Life front this week in Harrisburg, Michael. The Down Syndrome Protection Act has now passed both the House and the Senate. The governor says he will veto this bill, but this is still an important win for the pro-life movement. What is the message that you want to send with this legislation?
Well, the message with this legislation is that every life in the womb deserves to live, and there should be no targeting for death because of a disability diagnosis. You know, increasingly, with the ease of diagnosing in the womb the condition of Down syndrome, these babies are being targeted for death. Yeah. In some countries, as many as 100%. Here in Pennsylvania, upwards of 60 to 80% are the estimates. And we're trying to send a message to Pennsylvanians through this legislation that every life deserves to be protected from conception until natural death. And we encourage people to contact the governor and tell him to have a heart and to protect these lives.
Yeah. It has been almost a year, hard to believe, Jason, but it's been almost a year since New York's Reproductive Health Act, RHA, took effect. I know a lot of folks were just aghast when they saw that bill signing ceremony. But the left is kind of lamenting the lack of late-term abortions that have resulted from this. What in the world does that mean?
Well, it's interesting because during the debate last year, there was the argument made by those on the left, those that were advocating for abortion expansion, that no, this had nothing to do with late-term abortion. This wasn't changing anything. It was simply codifying Roe. And we made the argument all along, this is about late-term abortion expansion. We were, you know, called out for that in media and other places. But now we are seeing that senators and those that advocated for this are lamenting the fact that this is not resulting in an increase in late-term abortions, and they expect to see some further action coming. So remember, folks, this was all about late-term abortion expansion.
Yeah, and he's not a prophet nor the son of a prophet, but Jason, you see things pretty clearly. Michael, your old stomping grounds of Pittsburgh are going to be highlighted in this new film. I can't wait to see this new film about the late, great Fred Rogers. Of course, Tom Hanks does a masterful job portraying him. You know, in the midst of our political climate and the rancor and just the hostility. What's the lesson that we can learn from this larger-than-life figure, Fred Rogers?
There are so many lessons that can be learned from Fred Rogers, not only in his public life and the way he was portrayed in his television show and encouraging little children and everyone that every life is special, every life is created in the image of God and deserves to be respected, that we can treat each other with dignity and respect. But in addition, the private life that Fred Rogers lived, which is known in Pittsburgh but not known and maybe not portrayed all that well in the movie, I haven't seen it, but his private life of devotion to God is as a minister, as someone who got up very early in the morning, would work out and then pray on his knees and read the Bible, and the way he treated everyone was the kind of person that Fred Rogers was. And I think we can all learn a lesson, both publicly and privately, the way we comport ourselves is to treat everyone with respect and not use social media or other ways to sort of go and attack those with whom we disagree.
Yeah, I read an article that he got more mail than any man in America, and he answered a lot of that mail personally. Indeed, a rare figure. Jason, let's switch gears a little bit, talk about a very important issue. We had Alliance Defending Freedom on this week discussing Governor Cuomo's boss law,
and why pro-lifers are suing to stop it. Explain what this is all about.
Well, essentially, the formerly known as Boss Bill, now the Boss Law, mandates that all employers cannot take reproductive health decision-making into their employment process. They have to include policies in their policy manuals regarding some of these issues. And here's what it means. It means that I, as a pro-life organization, cannot only hire pro-life people, or a pro-life director could not fire an employee who has an abortion while on their staff. Picture a pastor of a local church who ends up in a sexual relationship with a congregant who becomes pregnant. If the pastor pays for that abortion, on what grounds can the church remove the pastor? And so it's a clear violation of our religious liberties and our sanctity of human life sensibilities.
That is really scary. Michael, a lot has been made about the Chick-fil-A controversy and the decision not to financially support organizations like Fellowship of Christian Athletes and the Salvation Army. They've been under a lot of pressure, Chick-fil-A, for years. What's your take? I mean, we've heard everything. I'm not buying any more chicken from them, you know. I mean, what is your take on this? What's the genesis of this? And did they really cave to political correctness here?
Well, I have to say that I was disappointed to hear the news that they were changing some of their giving, and specifically the rationale that was given by their COO, their president and COO, in an interview with a business magazine, in which he said, you know, as we move into new markets, places like New England and Europe, we need to make it clear who we are. And to combine that statement with the decision to stop funding and donating to Salvation Army and Fellowship of Christian Athletes sent a message that a lot of people have taken to say that they're sort of trying to soften their stance, their Christian stance, and that has disappointed a lot of people. I sent a message to Chick-fil-A to say, if indeed you are trying to quell those who oppose you from the LGBT community, that won't work. And in addition, an action like that will tend to diminish the support that you have for many Christians and those who support the values that you have purported historically.
Yeah.
So it's a challenging position right now for Chick-fil-A.
It really is, especially when you look at the history. They don't open on Sunday. That's how serious they are about their faith-based founding. And, you know, a lot of Christians just kind of felt, Jason, betrayed by this move. What's been your reaction to this controversy?
Well, I think it's all the things that Michael's just outlined. But in addition to that, you know, I'm concerned about the message it sends to other Christian business owners. And that's essentially what's happening here. We see this all across the country. We see where LGBT activists mount campaigns against specific companies because they want to send the chilling message to others that you dare not step out of line. And so when you see a company that is as large and as successful as Chick-fil-A, who now is going to kowtow and get in line, you know, we're concerned about what that says to smaller Christian businesses around the country. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very sad to say that this is the day that Chick-fil-A appears to have chickened out.
Yeah, great line. November is National Adoption Awareness Month. Michael, your organization does such a great job promoting adoption. We hear all the time about the number of kids that are stuck in the foster care system. Catholic adoption agencies in your state really under pressure right now. Explain what's going on.
Well, the pressure is coming from, again, the LGBT community, backed by Governor Wolf and by different city administrations in places like, and counties in places like Philadelphia, that are saying if an adoption agency chooses not to place children in foster care or in adoption in same-sex couple homes, then they will be stricken from government funding and from the government roles in terms of being able to place those children. And Catholic Charities has been one that has stood firm and said that we don't think it's appropriate, doesn't fit our Christian faith and our doctrine to place children in a home where there's not a mother and a father, at least, and certainly not in a same-sex couple home, violates their faith. And the government is saying, okay, well, if you do that, then we're not going to allow you to stay in business. And Catholic Charities has stood firm. Sadly, groups like Bethany Christian Services have caved.
Yeah.
World Magazine has a story about it. Basically, they're waving their white flag, and we're very disappointed with groups like that.
Yeah, kind of a common theme going here. But, Jason, we want to end on a positive note. You have launched this, and we really want folks to pay attention to what you're doing here, because I think this is monumental, what you're going to be getting involved with next year, getting more Christians involved. We've talked on this program a lot about you got to be involved at the grassroots level if you want to make a difference. But you're going to be partnering with another organization that you hear a lot on this radio station starting next year. Explain what you're doing, Jason.
Yeah, well, essentially, we have a Future Canada Institute that we're offering through our Rochester offices. And the long-term goal is to build the bench for future elected officials. And so January 11th will be our first school board training class here at our offices, and we're working with Ralph Kerr at the Teaching and Learning Institute, who has tremendous experience in that area, to come out and train people to say, hey, I'm thinking about running for school board, and help them understand what's involved in that, the importance of that role. And then if they do want to run for school board, we're going to encourage them to come back 1 month later and say, okay, here's how you do it. Here's the specifics of running for school board, how to run a campaign. And what we'll start as a school board, we envision moving all the way up to federal offices in the not-too-distant future. And I believe that seat by seat, we're going to retake this state.
That is awesome. That gives me chills thinking about the potential there. So much information on your websites. We encourage you to go there and check them out. Pennsylvania, Michael, what is that, sir?
PAFamily.org.
And in New York State, Jason, where can folks find you?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
Fastest 10 minutes in radio. Great show today, guys. As always, Capital Connection comes your way every Friday during the Noon Report. You can also find it online anytime, fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Behind the cold front that brought some showers and winds earlier today, a chilly night is coming up and a chilly weekend will follow. High pressure will deliver sunshine tomorrow for most of us, but low pressure will threaten cloud cover and a little mixed precipitation for some Saturday night into Sunday morning, particularly northeastern Pennsylvania. Here's our forecast for this afternoon. Still some gusty breezes out there with clouds, intervals of sunshine, and a few spots of brief shower or flurry. Temperatures have long since peaked for the day. They'll hold steady or drop from where they are now. Then tonight, mainly clear, less wind and chilly, down in the 20s. But tomorrow, sunshine most of the day. Clouds increase late, the high in the 40s. Rather cloudy on Sunday. Chance for a little morning mix across parts of eastern Pennsylvania, the eastern southern tier of New York. High temperatures Sunday in the lower 40s.
Okay, Kevin, have yourself a great weekend. Finally, this Friday, Oxford Dictionary's Word of the Year. Correspondent Phil Hewlett tells us it's actually two words.
The honor goes to climate emergency. Oxford said usage of the phrase increased so steeply this year that by September, it was more than 100 times as common as it had been last year. Climate emergency was chosen from a group of environment-related words and terms, including climate crisis, global heating, climate action, eco-anxiety, and ecocide.
There you go. Thank you, Phil. Phil Hewlett reporting. That is the world we live in this Friday. Thanks for coming along. Have yourself a great weekend, won't you? I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.